and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Before we get into the Sony Open, before we get to Chris Goddard, before we get to all of the other news of the week, Rex, you and I are not in our home studios. I think that's pretty obvious. We have this very bland beige backdrop. You and I look like we're in some sort of prison cells. Can you explain to the fine folks why you and I have a similar, if not identical, background for this show?
We are in Connecticut. You and I are co-hosting Golf Today over the next few days. It's going to be a lot of fun, but we are currently locked in our hotel room because it's blizzardy outside. I don't know if that's even a word, but it is snowing sideways.
Blizzardy is not an adjective.
It's absolutely miserable outside, and you're wearing a short sleeve shirt. I can only assume you're doing this ironically.
Yes, this is an ironic look. Also wanted to support Georgia with the Miami-Indiana National Championship game going on Monday. Yes, very nasty conditions out here. About, 50, 60 degrees different than when we left our houses in Florida. I'm from Western New York. I actually could drive in these conditions if I wanted to. You're a Florida boy. You're not getting behind the wheel on Monday morning, are you?
I don't believe I am. I do have a rental car. Normally, I don't have a problem driving anywhere, really. But it's in the snow. It could be icy. There was some rain. There was some sleet earlier in the day. And I've just learned, having been born and raised in Florida, me getting behind the wheel in those conditions doesn't do anyone any good. I'm a menace on the streets. Why would I ever do that? I have an Uber account. It's the beauty of having an Uber account. So yes, more than likely, you and I will huddle in the lobby tomorrow morning at 7:30 waiting for our Uber.
Pray for us. We just have to go like 2.5 miles before we get to the Golf Channel studios, where again, Rex and I will be hosting Golf Today. Check it out. Noon Eastern time on Golf Channel. A whole half a world away, Rex, from Stamford, Connecticut, is Honolulu, site of the Sony Open, the season opening event on the PGA Tour schedule after the Century was canceled. The winner this week, Chris Goddard. In fact, now a three-time winner on the PGA Tour, won the season opener by 2 shots over Ryan Gerard, made 7 birdies to Chris Goddard in what was a final round 64. Think about this. It's Rory, it's Scotty, and now it's Chris Goddard with the longest active streaks on the PGA Tour. Goddard now winning in his third consecutive season, when that opposite field event 2 years ago, Myrtle Beach, won last year at the Genesis Scottish Open, now wins the Sony. What's impressing you about this big burly boy?
Our colleague said it best at the end of the telecast at the Sony Open. He said, AO pointed out that Chris Goddard's game travels, pointing out that you mentioned Myrtle Beach. That's the Dunes Club. I've played there before. You're never going to confuse the Dunes Club for Renaissance Club, which is where he won the Scottish Open. And you're certainly not going to confuse either one of those courses for Wailea for the Sony Open. All three of them are vastly different. Renaissance Club is a bit of a links-style golf course, so he really had to control his golf ball and the conditions that week. This week, very, very similar. If you look at the scoring average, specifically for Friday and Saturday, you don't really see that at the Sony Open. Conditions got really, really difficult. But I think the part that probably impressed me the most about what he did is, keep in mind, he started the day trailing. If you look, Davis Riley started the day with a 2-shot lead. It really flipped early. And then you just look at what Chris did as the day started rolling. He had sort of that look of Tiger Woods. And I think Stuart Sink told me this once, that when Tiger Woods got into the lead, he did what they call in the NHL and hockey, he just played a prevent defense. Like, he wasn't going to allow anyone to come and catch him. And it got easy coming down the stretch because he had a commanding lead. But just the way he was able to navigate those last few holes, there is danger out there. He could have gotten himself into trouble. He could have made that tournament much more interesting than it was. But it was really a brilliant performance. And we're going to talk a lot about Chris Goddard in the future. I truly believe that. You look at his power. He hit some unbelievable drives coming down the stretch on Sunday. It's his short game that really stood out to me. He led the field in sand saves. I think he was 14th in the field in getting up and down around the green. He has the type of touch that you just expect from a player that doesn't have the power that he brings to the table. And the one consensus on the telecast, and I would tend to agree, he has all the tools to be a superstar. I know what you were doing, throwing him in that category with Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy.
Stats are stats. Facts are facts.
Stats are stats. You're absolutely right. And he has all the physical tools. And now I think we're starting to see the other side of it. You're starting to see how strong he is mentally.
Yeah, look, our Golf Channel colleagues were pretty breathless when describing Chris Goddard over the past couple of days at Wailea. And I think for good reason. When you look at the physical skill set that he does possess, I mean, he's the modern player epitomized, right? Like, he was absolutely blasting T tee shots. Think about this, Rex. On the back nine alone, 357, 359, 342, and 337. He wasn't just sending them everywhere. They were dead, solid, perfect, right down the center stripe, allowing him to attack. And look, I still think Chris Scotterup is a pretty unpolished player. You look at least statistically last season on the PGA Tour, he did have the victory. He did have the third place finish at the Open Championship, first time he'd played Lynx Golf in that major championship. He was still outside the top 100 in every iron category. Long irons, mid irons, short irons, wedges. I mean, his proximity to the hole was just not up to PGA Tour standards. He has a lot of shaft lean with his scoring clubs that makes judging his distances a little bit tricky. And you look at what happened over the back nine. Yes, he was repeatedly pounding the middle of the fairway, but he was also hitting it to what, 20, 25, 30 feet on occasion with his wedges. He still, I think, has a lot of room for improvement. However, even though he has that distance, even though he does have that touch on and around the greens, I think even more impressive, Rex, than like the physical tools that Chris Scotterup has is his mental toughness, mental fortitude that he has shown. He knows how to win. This is a former College Player of the Year, a former Haskins Award winner in college after transferring from Rutgers to Oklahoma. He has now won each of the three seasons on the PGA Tour. Remember last year at the Scottish Open, literally staring down Rory McIlroy in the same group ahead of was going to be a home game for Rory McIlroy at Royal Portrush. One of the most impressive performances, mano a mano, that we saw through the duration of a 2025 PGA Tour season. And now, I think even without his sharpest game with his approach play into what are pretty tiny targets at Wailea, Chris Scotterup comes out top in his season opener, and now I think can even springboard him to what could be a breakout season in 2026.
And the Sony Open is always one of those low-scoring affairs. Not so much this time around. I mentioned the winds really came up on Friday and Saturday. He really had to control his golf ball, and he was impressive with that. To go back to your point, you're right. He clearly has parts of his game that he can improve on. I went back and looked, and that two-week stretch when he wins the Scottish Open and then finishes third at the Open Championship, he earned 850 FedEx Cup points. He finished the season with a total of 1,300 FedEx Cup points. So he really made all his hay in that two-week span in July. That's not to take anything away from him. Clearly, he needs to be more consistent when you look at what he was able to do that year. And you're right, a little breathless on the telecast, but I think it's well-founded. I think he's come by it honestly when you look at the skill set that he has and the fact that, as we pointed out, his game travels. It's not as though he gets to one golf course and seems to be able to lean in to one aspect of his game. He can be a complete player on a given week. He just needs to be more consistent.
Yeah, and look, you look at the young crop of players on the PGA Tour, Michael Brennan, Michael Thorbjornsson, a Luke Clanton, an Aldrich Potgieter, all these players hit it miles, and so does Chris Scotterup. He was top 10 on the PGA Tour in driving distance last year. You saw, and I rattled off some of the numbers that he had on the back nine at Wailea, which is, of course, a golf course that is not necessarily conducive to that sort of big hitting. However, to me, what makes him such an intriguing prospect is how he can vary his trajectory and his shot shaping. I mean, he was hitting shots, Rex, off the tee that were 40, 50, 60 feet in apexes, just absolute bullets. That's why you saw him play well at the Scottish Open. That's why you saw him play well in his first Open Championship. That's why you saw him play well on the weekend at the Sony, where winds were anywhere from 15 to 25 mile an hour, depending on the gust. So he has a lot of shapes. He's not just sort of this brainless ball basher. And I feel like there's a tendency to lump a lot of these players in the same category. Chris Scotterup is not that. He's not that at all. One thing that I do love, Rex, about the early stages of a PGA Tour season is seeing the incremental growth and watching players who we can be excited about as golf observers take it to the next level. And when you look at Chris Scotterup in 2026, this is the first time we're going to see him now with that elite schedule. He was already going to be playing in the signature events in 2026 by virtue of making it to Tour Championship last season. So that was not going to be a question anyway with some of the perks that he was going to have for winning the Sony Open. But it's the first time we're going to see him, I think, routinely week in and week out against the Scotties, against the Rorys, against the Xanders. So I think that's going to be a great litmus test to see just how good Chris Scotterup really is. But I think it's pretty clear in some of the action steps that he has taken over the past couple of months, he's taken this pretty seriously. He's getting more professional. He talked earlier in the week about moving from Oklahoma to South Florida in large part to start faster on the PGA Tour schedule. He did not have a top 20 that Chris Goddard in the first 2 months of the season, the last 2 years. This is a hot start, and I think it really can be a springboard. It wouldn't surprise you to see him win another tournament, if not two tournaments, just because of the physical skill set and how that really is conducive to success in the PGA Tour.
And look, he's young in his career, but we've already seen it. He's already sort of established himself that once he gets on these rolls, he can, you know, rattle off some really good finishes, last year in July being the primary example of that. And you touched on something, and tomorrow Trip Eisenhower is going to be on Golf Central. And I was curious, and I was texting back and forth with him tonight about this was a really good litmus test of what you kind of see in the offseason now from the PGA Tour players. I think some PGA Tour players, and Chris is probably a really good example of that, really focus, really drill down during the offseason and try to improve not just certain aspects of their game, but their body, try to rest and rehab, try to do all of the things that you do in a traditional offseason. And you don't really have that in golf, but you try to take that window and you make the most of it. I think what we saw last week from some other players is they probably just didn't want to touch a golf club for a long time. We saw some high-profile players not miss the cut, not even have an opportunity to play the weekend. I'm talking about Colin Morikawa, and Tony Finau is in that mix. Now, I'm not saying they mailed it in during the offseason, but it seems to me when the Sony, this is a bit of a one-off because the Century usually starts the season, but the Sony's always a good test because it shows you exactly which players showed up wanting that hot start, wanting to get off to a fast start, get some sort of momentum going into the West Coast, and then take that all the way to Augusta National.
Yeah, certainly was an interesting start to the PGA Tour season. It also, Rex, could be the last of this sort of start to the PGA Tour season. Didn't play, obviously, this year at Kapalua because of the agronomic issues that they had last fall. This is the final year of the Sony deal, so we're going to see what happens with the tournament in this future. We are looking at this private equity world when you're looking at optimization and inefficiencies. What did you make of the abbreviated Hawaiian swing? And do you think, looking ahead, will something be lost if this is not part of the PGA Tour schedule moving forward?
I'm going to throw you under the bus unfairly, so I'm going to apologize right out of the gate. I had a hard time getting you to focus on the podcast because you were distracted. What were you distracted by?
I was distracted by an instant classic of an NFL divisional playoff game.
Absolutely. Chicago Bears ended up losing. That's too bad for all of the Chicago Bear fans out there. However, I think it just speaks to where we are right now in sports, not necessarily golf. And we've touched on this before. This didn't feel like it was the last Sony Open. Like, I've been at events that I was at the last time they played at Disney. The PGA Tour played at Disney, and that felt like it was a wake. It felt like that event was going away and it was never coming back. I didn't necessarily get that feeling from Sony, but it's a very real possibility. If Tiger Woods and the future competition committee, if they get their way and they get that condensed schedule, which is 2025 events starting after the Super Bowl, ending before Labor Day, all of the things that we've talked about, if he gets it, something has to give. And right now, it's easy to point to those specific two events right now and say, yeah, we should probably start there. Because you said it, private equity wants a return on their investment. And you don't want to be the one tournament that gives the folks in Ponte Vedra Beach even one reason to be like, I love Maui. I love going to Sony. It's beautiful. It's great shots. We have all kinds of history there, but it's really expensive. And I think that's just one of those knocks that's going to keep catching up over and over again. There is a bit of a derailment here when we have this conversation. This is the last year that Sony has signed on to sponsor that event. Century is quite different. Century is signed on through 2035. So I don't understand how contracts work all the time, but it seems to me that one's pretty ironclad. So I'm not quite sure how you work around that. But as we go closer to whatever the future of the PGA Tour is going to be, if it is going to be scarcity, if it is going to be this condensed model where you put more stock in the biggest events with the biggest players and the biggest markets, yes, I would say Sony and Maui are both on the chopping block for a lot of reasons that we've pointed out.
Yeah, the tour is subsidizing some of the Century purse, which I think is obviously a red flag in this new world that they're operating with private equity and the PGA Tour and the for-profit model. Look, on Sunday, part of me was wondering, like, what are we doing here? The final round of the Sony Open was going up directly against the NFL, as it did on Saturday for the third round of the Sony Open. There were very few fans who were out there at Wailea. There's a better field waiting this week in Palm Springs at the American Express, which again is going to be going up on Sunday against the AFC and the NFC championship game. However, so all that said, like, I do think those are some pretty strong headwinds that you are facing as a golf fan, as a tournament operator, as a PGA Tour executive, when looking at the model and what can be done better to better optimize your product. Like, those are some pretty strong headwinds. I do think, however, that if you lost a Kapalua, if you do lose a Wailea, I think some of the character and the soul of the PGA Tour is potentially going to be forfeited as well. Like, I think Kapalua and I think Wailea are pretty interesting venues. I think it makes for interesting viewing, not just for on-site spectating, which again is pretty sparse, but for folks like you and I who are tuning in prime time and wanting to see trade winds. We're wanting to see balls that are played along the ground. We're wanting to see these pretty narrow dog legs and 5-inch rough that's waiting to swallow tee shots that are not perfectly played in those sorts of winds. I think a lot of the PGA Tour schedule can feel pretty homogenous, and this isn't it. The Hawaii stretch is not that at all. You have a big ballpark at Kapalua. You have a narrow, tight corridor at Wailea. There's a pretty interesting contrast, and I still am keeping the faith that a slimmed down tour product can be worth investing in, that I do think it can be beneficial for fans and observers of the PGA Tour. But I think it's indisputable that some character, some soul would be lost as a golf fan if this sort of thing was removed from the PGA Tour schedule.
And I don't disagree with that, but you do have to play devil's advocate for all the reasons that I just pointed out. That if we're marching towards this future that seems inevitable at this point, it's simple math. There's 35 plus events right now in the PGA Tour schedule, and we're looking at something closer to 25. I'm not very good at math, but that means that roughly 10 to 15 events are going to go somewhere else, either go away or go to some other version of whatever the next level down is going to be from the PGA Tour. You're right. I think I can point to a lot of events on the PGA Tour schedule that are probably on the chopping block for a lot of different reasons that have been part of the fabric of the PGA Tour for generations, not years, not decades, but generations. And the idea is, if you're going to move the tour into this bigger market, and by market, I just mean an overall product, but yeah, it's great going to Honolulu. It's great going to Silvis, Illinois. It's great going to all these little communities where you are the biggest show in town. That's not how you sell the product. That's not what scarcity means. I don't think that's what Brian Rolapp and the FCC are trying to get to.
No, I certainly understand that viewpoint. I think from a competitive standpoint, a lot of players like playing these two golf courses because it is different, because there are certain shot-making qualities that you don't see week in and week out during the heart of the PGA Tour schedule. I think from a competitive standpoint, something would be lost. From a financial standpoint, yeah, it probably makes a lot of sense to lop those off, to condense a season, to work around football, to make sure you're doing it between the Super Bowl and Labor Day. Like, I understand all of the financial realities from a nostalgic standpoint, from a competitive standpoint. That's kind of where I was going with my point, that when everything feels sort of homogenous and you just need to bash it as long as you can during the late spring and the heart of the summer on the PGA Tour, this at least feels different. It makes for interesting viewing, even if only, let's call it, 750,000 people are tuning in for the final round.
Well, and I don't like doing this to our colleague, Mark Roffing, because he's the man that is trying to save golf in Hawaii. He is Mr. Golf Hawaii. So I do feel bad the position that he and the rest of the people in Hawaii are when it comes to this. However, I will point back to just a generation ago, when we're talking about Tiger Woods as a generation and Phil Mickelson as a generation, they largely didn't go to the Century. Yes, they went off one a few times, but it was largely a big pass for them for a lot of different
reasons.
Rory doesn't go, but there was a lot of different reasons to do that. It wasn't until the generation that included Jordan Spieth and JT and those players, they decided that, no, I like going to Maui. They also redid the greens, so you weren't dealing with as much grain. It seems like the trade winds and the Konas didn't impact that generation of players the way maybe it did Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, who made it clear they don't want to start the season playing in a wind tunnel. Like, they spent all offseason trying to work on their swing, getting ready for the new year, and suddenly you show up and you're making all these adjustments. That's not the best way to start the year. And when you hear the stories coming out of the Future Competitions Committee, one of the things that keeps coming up over and over again, everyone I talk to, is they want a big start. They want an opening day, and they want that in a major market. Doral came up on numerous occasions when I was talking to players and officials about where we could maybe see this schedule going. I can tell you, Sony, Century, that never came up.
Yeah, which is understandable. Doral would make a lot of sense. I think Phoenix makes a lot of sense. Obviously, this time of year, even if you did push the start date, you know, 3 to 4 weeks later, you're pretty limited in where you can start the PGA Tour season. It wouldn't be at the American Express. That's you and I have both covered that tournament in Palm Springs at PGA West. That's a pretty sleepy start as well. But I think there is something, just like NASCAR, we brought up the Daytona 500, which can be contested in a couple of weeks. Having a huge event first, not just for excitement, but for, I think, having a big event where more people are tuning in and then sustaining that momentum for the first couple of months of the season, I think can be a very powerful tool instead of the soft launch that the PGA Tour has had, and at least right now still has. All right, we promise not to have that exact same discussion next week when we're recapping the American Express, which is up against the conference championship games of the NFL, but don't hold us to this. After the break, if you are new here, we're doing Love It or Lave It. Yes, you either love something or you hate on it. You scoff at it. It's a lot of fun. We'll do it after the break. Stay with us. All right, Rex, it's time for the season debut of Love It or Lave It. If you're keeping score at home, you either love something or you lave it. Please keep score. We can keep the tally at the end of this segment. Let's first start, Rex, with Wyndham Clark, who told Sirius XM Radio last week that he was torn over the Brooks Koepka comeback because he called it, quote, frustrating that Koepka was able to get his cake and also eat it. I feel like we should be retiring that expression, but that's beside the point. Here is the quote that really stood out to me. I'm going to read it to you. If you would have told me, this is Wyndham Clark talking, that I could have gone for a year and a half, make a boatload of money, and then come back and play on the PGA Tour, I think almost everyone would have done that. Does Wyndham Clark have a point, you loving or laving his beef potentially with Brooks Koepka?
I think, to be fair, the way the story was framed, this sounds more like Wyndham is upset with his choice more so than Brooks. Because in retrospect, he's looking back saying, I could have taken the bag, gone to live golf for a year or two, and then come back and all would have been forgiven. I don't know if that would have been the case. Clearly, this is going to be an a la carte situation when it comes to different players. This was specific to four players this time around. I will say the one thing that he pointed out that did resonate with me was the idea that this has to be a one-time offer. This does have to be a good fellow's offer where, nope, you have this one-time window to take advantage of it. Because if it's not, I started to fast forward and think about the impact that could have, because that could lead to a very dangerous decision. If players start to see time and time again that the PGA Tour is willing to circumvent their own rules for the good of the tour, you and I spent a lot of time talking about the idea that, look, this was a very elegant solution that Brian Rolep and the rest of the tour came up with to a very complicated issue. But if they circle back around, let's say the deadline on February 2nd, I believe it is, comes and goes, and then a year from now, we're in this exact same situation with Bryson this time around, and it makes sense that we possibly would be, I can see how that would create almost a scenario where you're almost enticing players now to take the money. It would be so much more. Let's put it in this context. If you're a young player who's gotten a contract, and you and I talked about the Akshay Patia situation where he was offered a contract in the offseason to go to Live Golf. Fast forward a year, and let's say they do get Live Golf does get world ranking points, and now the tour has circled back around and opened up this window again. What's to keep a young player like Akshay from going, taking the bag now, competing for a year or two on Live Golf, and then just knowing I can always circle back around and they'll welcome me back? That is a very, very slippery slope that I think that was the bigger concern that Wyndham voiced, that I was like, yeah, I can see that becoming a problem.
I think we're overlooking the risk, though. I mean, any player who jumped to Live was taking a competitive risk, not knowing about world ranking points, not knowing about major championship access, not knowing if there was going to be a pathway back. Like, Brooks Koepka is a singular talent. Bryson DeChambeau is a singular talent. John Rahm is a singular talent. One-time major winners are probably going to be viewed differently. And look, you can look at Cam Smith, and he won the Players' Championship. He won the Open Championship in 2022 as well. He almost seemed like a throw into the deal. I think everyone knew that Cam Smith was not going to be leaving Live Golf. This was more just a catch-all for those other three players who they really desired. And I don't think those three players are treated like anyone else on Live for good reason. The PGA Tour really wants them back, not just for their personalities, not just for their personas, not just for their major championship pedigrees, but these are generationally great players. Brooks Koepka, five-time major winner. John Rahm, I think, has a chance to go down as one of the greatest European players ever. Bryce DeChambeau, arguably the most popular player on the planet. I think you have to silo those off as opposed to a one-time major winner in Wyndham Clark and thinking all the rules are going to be a catch-all for those players. You're not playing by the rules of the game, right? Were you loving or laughing what Wyndham Clark said? It sounds like you're loving it.
I did love it. Like I said, felt more, less about him lashing out to Brooks and even lashing out to the PGA Tour than maybe just second guessing himself. Like, he was in a position to take a big bag of money back in the day when he had the opportunity to, and decided not to, for whatever reasons you threw out there. Maybe you just touched on it. Maybe he felt like the risks were too great. And I think there were a lot of players in that category. The uncertainty around the world ranking points, the idea that you just don't know what's going to happen with this league. Could they pull the plug after a year? There was a lot of gray areas. Then I can imagine that's what sent people in the wrong direction. But I love the idea that he touched on the important factors here. He touched on the idea that the PGA Tour, they doled out plenty of penalties. Like, we can sit here and say that, no, he's coming back scot-free. That's not the case at all. He's going to have to pay millions of dollars, either that it's the $5 million he's going to give to charity, the money he's giving up in equity, the money he would, in theory, give up when it comes to FedEx Cup bonus at the end of the season. All of those things add up to very real money. And the window seems to work out well. You're telling these players you need to make a decision right now. I love the idea that Wyndham called him out on it.
Yeah, I love Wyndham's candor. I love his honesty. I love his transparency. What I don't love, aka I'm laughing, is that it does feel like revisionist history. Because as you mentioned, Wyndham Clark had that chance to leave after he won the U.S. Open in 2023, and he didn't take it. Why? At the time, he said that there's more that the PGA Tour can offer than just money. It's competing for important titles. It's competing for world ranking points. It's competing for legacy. And there's a lot more on the PGA Tour that he wanted to accomplish. And so at the time, it wasn't just about getting a big bag. It wasn't just about getting his cake and eating it too. At the time, at least, he felt like there was more that he wanted to accomplish, and it would be a competitive risk for him to potentially throw that away for a 8 or 9 figure payday from LIV Golf. And so that's why I'm laughing it, because it did feel like revisionist history. And now the PGA Tour is simply moving the goalposts. Keeping in line with this, Rex, was a statement from Roy McIlroy that he gave to our friend James Corrigan of The Telegraph last week in Dubai, where he said that LIV is not signing any needle movers. In fact, quote, "I don't think they will. They could re-sign Bryson for hundreds of millions of dollars," Roy said, "but even if they do, it doesn't change their product, does it? They'll just be paying for the exact same thing." Roy McIlroy, to say the quiet part out loud, and are you loving or laughing his point here?
There's nothing he said that's wrong. You have to love it. I mean, if I could point to something that I truly felt was wrong, and this is no disrespect to Thomas Peters or any of the other players who joined LIV Golf this year, they're just not going to move the needle the way LIV Golf probably needs them to move the needle. I said it before and I'll say it again. John Rahm is the last player that they signed of any significance that had the opportunity to move the needle. And to take the step further, to your point, the quiet thing out loud is, yes, if LIV Golf decides at the end of this season they're going to double back around and sign Bryson DeChambeau to a new contract, which would be a massive contract, I can only imagine, you're getting a commodity that you've had all along, and you haven't been able to capitalize that, at least not in the United States, in a way that makes it look like it's a good investment. That, to me, is the real quiet part out loud, because who are the real needle movers? Like, it's a very small, finite group of people, if we're being honest, of true players that not only perform on the course. We just did 15 minutes on Chris Goddard and how he has all the makings of a potential star. What you do on the golf course matters, but also matters what you do off the golf course. Tiger Woods was a generational player, not because he kept exceeding expectations, tournament after tournament, win after win. He was a generational type of player because he broke down so many walls in golf, and he transcended golf into sports. He was the greatest star at that moment in time in all of sports, just not golf. Those players don't come along very often. And I would turn this back on you and challenge, how many needle movers are there actually in the game right now? I would say Rory is clearly one of them. Bryson is one of them. I think Scotty is one of them, but I don't know that you could sit and point to him.
Scotty is. People like watching a dominant player, and Scotty is that. So I would say he's a needle mover.
Jordan Spieth, for a lot of different reasons. Like, now I'm just revisiting the PIP list, and I don't want to do that. But the idea is, it's such a small group of people that I'm not even quite sure who LIV Golf at this point could sign that would qualify as quote unquote a needle mover.
I'm loving this too. I love Rory's honesty, just like I liked Wyndham Clark's honesty. I like when you ask a player a question and he gives you an honest answer. I'm also loving the fact that Rory McIlroy has a great point here. You could make the argument, Rex, that even Bryson DeChambeau has not been a needle mover for LIV Golf. Bryson DeChambeau has been a needle mover for his own social media channels. He's been a needle mover for the major championships when he's been in contention. He's certainly been in contention over the past couple of years. But what does LIV have to show right now for its Bryson DeChambeau investment? They've burned through billions of dollars. They have very little TV audience here in the U.S. They don't have serious valuations for their franchises. There hasn't been this grand reshaping of the global golf landscape to now be viewed through the prism of team golf like LIV Golf was hoping when they launched back in 2022. Paying Bryson DeChambeau at the end of 2026 would essentially be paying just to subsist, right? And just to continue LIV Golf in perpetuity, or at least over the next 3 or 4 years, however long Bryson DeChambeau gets signed for. That's no way to live. And so I applaud Rory for saying what a lot of people are saying. He just so happened to say it out loud. All right. Third topic, and this one is pretty minutia, pretty gets down to the nitty-gritty of PGA Tour policies. But they did announce, actually, just like a couple hours before the Sony Open kicked off in Hawaii, that the PGA Tour playoff winners, so the FedEx Cup playoffs, are now going to be receiving fewer FedEx Cup points. So keep in mind, last year, FedEx Cup playoff winners would receive about 2,000 FedEx Cup points. Now they're going to receive 750, which puts the playoff wins more in line with the Players' Championship or the Major Championship. Also, and this is going to be important because it relates to Brooks Koepka, the bonus money for the FedEx Cup playoffs is going to be paid out after the BMW Championship, which is second leg of the postseason. That means Brooks Koepka, if he qualifies for the season-ending Tour Championship, can still get a piece of the $40 million purse at Eastlake. Are you loving or laving these changes by the PGA Tour?
Well, I don't understand them, so I'm going to go with laving it. And the reason I don't understand them is you go back to the idea that the reason you had these exaggerated points for the first two playoff events is the PGA Tour wanted to inject more volatility into the playoffs. This is after feeling like they had too much volatility for a few years. And this was after a few years when they felt like they had not enough volatility. You get what I'm saying here? Like, we've been bouncing back and forth now for the better part of two decades when it comes to trying to find that perfect solution for the players. I think this came up within the last few weeks about when you look at those three tenets, and we keep talking about scarcity, but you look at the three tenets that Brian Rolapp wants the future competition.
Simplicity.
Simplicity was one that came up. And I think you and I had some fun with it because you asked me, well, how does he get to that at the Tour Championship? I don't know. Again, the PGA Tour and a lot of smart people have been trying to come up with a solution for the better part of two decades and can't do it. So all this is doing is wiping clean the idea that we needed more volatility, at least for those first two playoff events. That's the only thing it's doing there. Giving a purse back to Eastlake makes perfect sense because that was always going to cause issues. That was always going to be a little confusing. The idea that I love that Tommy Fleetwood got his first victory at the Tour Championship, because not only did you get your first victory at the Tour Championship, but you won the FedEx Cup. It was this huge sort of avalanche of things that come your way. I get why they did that when it comes to the Tour Championship. I don't understand the idea that you dial the points back. Yes, it was silly that those two events got almost three times as many points as you would get at the Players' Championship or a major, but you wanted movement in the points. And that's the way you mathematically were going to pull it off. Now, suddenly they're saying that, no, we don't want that. It makes no sense to me. I love that.
Well, look, I love it because they're trying to at least have a FedEx Cup champion that's better reflective of season long performance. And not to pick on Justin Rose, but Justin Rose won the first event in Memphis last year, the first playoff event during a year in 2025, in which, yes, he contended and lost in the playoff at the Masters, but he had a pretty quiet season overall. All of a sudden, he is then vaulted into the top three, the top five of the FedEx Cup points by virtue of just winning a playoff event and potentially pushing out, let's call it a Sepp Straka, who I think over the course of the season had a better resume than Justin Rose, but Justin Rose won a playoff event. So I can see why they were trying to eliminate that sort of volatility. Because if you're trying to really crown a season-long champion, again, if you are trying to create simplicity with the model in crowning the best player all season long, yeah, then I think dialing back the points makes a lot of sense. One of the other reasons, Rex, why I love this move is that they've done away with that Comcast Business Top 10. Remember, they always paid that out after the Wyndham Championship, the final event of the regular season. That never made sense to me either. Why would the players who have already been handsomely compensated for playing the best all season long also get a bonus for finishing inside the top 10? They're going to be getting paid out with the FedEx Cup bonus structure anyway for finishing the top 10. It always felt superfluous. So I like that as well. The second point I think is interesting too, because I'll be curious to see what PGA Tour players think about this move. So Brooks Koepka will not be eligible to receive any of the bonus money that'll be paid out after the BMW. But if he does make it to East Lake, he can be paid some of the $40 million purse. We may be overlooking, Rex, just how hard it's going to be for Brooks Koepka to get to East Lake. It's probably going to require him to finish, I don't know, four top 10s, double-digit top 25s during the PGA Tour season in order to crack the top 30. It's gotten tougher and tougher. Have to earn about $5 million roughly in season-long earnings. That's a really great season. That's how a lot of players measure themselves, not just against the best competition, but also sort of the arcs and the trajectories of their career. So I think that's going to be interesting to see as well if Brooks Koepka can actually get to East Lake and make this a talking point once we get to Atlanta.
And this conversation has come up over the last few years. But yes, if you're on the outside of the signature events, which Brooks Koepka is going to be starting out this season as a returning member, you're kind of up against it. I mean, you're giving away points and you're giving away money to those who are in those signature events. So not only do you have to play well, but you have to play well at the right times, I think is what we've learned over the last 2 years, that you need to make sure that you're picking your swings correctly. If not, it just turns into a season-long grind where you're just trying to get through those two or three non-signature events, earn enough points so you can somehow get in to the good ones and try to break through. We've seen players do it. Ricky Fowler did it. Jordan Spieth has done it over the last few years, but it is really difficult.
Speaking of grinding, that's all Brooks Koepka appears to be doing anytime he is posted on social media. His season starts next week, the Farmers Insurance Open. You'll be there for a couple of days at Torrey Pines. Another start the following week at the Phoenix Open. I'll be there as well. How Brooks Koepka plays, I mean, it's got to be a top two or three storyline in 2026 to follow on the PGA Tour, and it starts next week in San Diego. All right, final love it or lav it for this week is Vijay Singh and the 62-year-old who is using the career money list exemption on the PGA Tour, made the cut at the Sony Open to silence all of the haters and the doubters, of which there are many. Rex, are you loving or laving the story as it relates to old but young Vijay?
I love the story. And I think when this got brought up last week or 2 weeks ago, when we first learned that he was taking that career money exemption, the easiest comeback on all of this, and you talk about the haters, there really should be no hating. This is just a regulation. And he took advantage of the fact that he is in the top 50 and the top 25 on the career money list by a long shot. And that
he's
gives him the right.
He's sixth in career money.
He's sixth in career money, and it's he hasn't competed full-time on the PGA Tour in almost a decade. So you get an idea of how really prolific he was in his prime. Tiger Woods' prime as well. I think that always gets washed over. I think sometimes it's easy to forget how good Vijay Singh was because he went head-to-head with the best of that generation. It's written into the regulations. If you don't like the regulations, then send a letter to Brian Rolapp is what I would suggest, because players use this exemption every single year. So I love it. However, I'm going to cede the rest of my time for your apology, which I think you owe Vijay right now.
No, I think you're misremembering what I said. I said was that Vijay Singh earned this exemption and he should be allowed to use it. And look, he made good in his first start on the PGA Tour in 2026. He became the second oldest player to make the cut in a PGA Tour event. He became the first player, I think this is the most mind-blowing stat of all, the first player to make the cut in four decades on the PGA Tour, which is absolutely crazy to think about as well. Why Vijay Singh has pulled this lever for 2026, I have not seen an answer on that.
Why not?
We were not out.
But why not?
We don't know. Like, maybe does he just feel really good about his game? He did have a post on social media thanking his trainers for getting him over the injury hump that he had in 2025, said he feels as good as he had in years. Maybe he realizes that he's running out of time. He turns 63 next month. You know, most likely, when you look at the future of the PGA Tour, they're probably going to get rid of this loophole in the career money list exemption. So he feels like, hey, if it's about to go away, maybe I better do it now. Will he just pick and choose his spots? Like, is he going to play a full schedule on the PGA Tour? Is he going to play 20, 25 times? Is he also going to play an additional full schedule on the PGA Tour Champions? Or is he just going to play, I think most likely, 4 to 6 times, tournaments, events, golf courses in which he thinks that he can make the cut and play particularly well? We don't really know the answer to that. I did not see any reporting from Honolulu. We've not had a chance to run into Vijay and ask him ourselves. We will endeavor to do so over the next month if we see him. However, I think overall, Rex, I would still lave the idea, because what golf in the PGA Tour should be, just like sports in general, is a what have you done for me lately league. You know, that's sports in general. How many times have you heard players or coaches, regardless of the sport, say last year is last year. It doesn't guarantee anything. The calendar's turned and now we need to go out and earn it this year. That is sort of the ethos that I think the PGA Tour could use more of. There's a lot of safety nets. There's a lot of exemptions. There's a lot of ways back to the PGA Tour. There's a lot of guys who are fully exempt from the PGA Tour based on what they did 2 or 3 years ago. If you want to modernize the PGA Tour, if you want to progress it, if you want to evolve it, it needs to fall in line with other sports. And that is cutting out some of the safety nets that exist. A career moneyless exemption for a player, again, who is 62 years old, is probably a good place to start. Again, that's nothing against Vijay. He has every right to use that exemption right now because it's written in the rule book. But if you're looking to modernize the PGA Tour, that would be a pretty good place to start.
And I think we get there. The priority list has already started to, let's say, trim from where it was before. You're already starting to see some of those categories that had just been around forever. And the problem is a lot of the people that are involved in these decisions, I'm talking about the players on the Player Advisory Council and the players on the policy board, they're getting to a stage in their careers where they're starting to see their own light dissipate a little bit, at least from a professional standpoint. And so, yes, they're motivated to put these loopholes in there. Like, trust me, they just added a loophole for 300 cuts as a priority list, as someone who can play on the PGA Tour, even if you don't finish inside the top 100 or whatever the case may be. That is very much self-serving if you're a player on the policy board and you're thinking to yourself, well, I have 300 cuts. That would probably work out well for me. I can imagine in the future that we talk a lot about, starting in 2027 or beyond, that there's only going to be a handful of exemptions. You're going to start with the majors. You're going to go to a multi-time winner on the PGA Tour. You're going to do the points list and then maybe a handful of others, medical categories, that type of thing. But there was a time when there were 38 categories on the priority list. That's already gotten cut probably by a third. It's going to be cut even more.
I mean, that's been one of the criticisms, hasn't it, of LIV Golf, where we don't really know if there is actual promotion and relegation. Players might be in the drop zone, but they're still getting picked back up by their teams. The contracts, you could have a poor year, but if you're if there's language in your contract that you could be brought back. Like, if we're going to knock LIV for that, we also need to lock the PGA Tour for that and say that there are too many loopholes or too many safety nets. There's too many exemption categories as well. I think that'd be a fair criticism as well. Again, this is nothing against Vijay. It's written in the rules right now that he can use it. He's free to use it 25 times. He's free to use it just twice. I think it remains to be seen exactly what his plans are. Kudos to him, first of all, for going the season opener against what has been one of the stronger fields that the Sony Open has had and going out and making the cut, ended up finishing in a tie for 40th. Good on you, Vij. Seriously, one of the all-time greats of his generation. Was an absolute dog back in the day going up against Tiger in his prime. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about Rory, Shane Lowry, and yes, the world number one Scottie Scheffler making his 2026 debut this week at the American Express. Hang with us. All right, Rex, let's get out of here on some punch shots. We'll first start with Shane Lowry, who coughed up the lead on the 72nd hole at the Dubai Invitational, eventually losing to Nacho Elvira. Shane Lowry didn't necessarily blade a bunker shot, Rex, but he carried a little bit too far onto the downslope, went into the water, made double bogey. Rory McIlroy also had a chance to win this golf tournament, ended up making bogey on the 72nd hole and ran out of steam. Which 72nd hole play was most surprising to you in Dubai?
I felt like Rory was just knocking some dust off. That really felt like spring training for Rory. He showed up with cavity back irons. What's next? He's going to get five or six head covers in his bag now. He's going to start angling for a nine wood. I just don't believe that that's a thing
going
with Rory.
Full Aaron Rye. Yes.
Yes. No, it's Shane Lowry. That was shocking for him to end it the way he did. When you go back and watch it, it was a combination of poor decision making, poor execution, poor choices, whatever it is you want to break it down. And it kind of is another really good example. We saw it a couple times during the Sony Open on Sunday as well. We forget how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour. We forget how much pressure there is to try to execute those shots perfectly and make the perfect decisions coming down the stretch. And Shane just didn't do that. Keep in mind, he has not won an individual title. Of course, he won with Rory last year at the Zurich Classic, but he hasn't won an individual title since 2022 at the BMW PGA on the DP World Tour. It's starting to get away from him a little bit. And I think for a player of his caliber, we know he can be so tough on himself, but you watch the way everything just unraveled coming down the stretch when all you needed was a par for a playoff. That hurt.
Remember Philly Cricket Cup last year at the Truist? Shane Lowry had an opportunity to win that golf tournament, ended up giving it to Sepp Straka. This one, I don't even necessarily chalk up to the bunker shot, and obviously it was a little bit tricky, had to carry it, but not too far because then it was going to trickle on the downslope. He could have bumped it into the green. I go back to the approach shot and missing the green, potentially getting too cute, being in between clubs, ended up tugging that one left, which from a pretty benign position when all he needed to do was put it on the green and two putt from there to win the golf tournament. That's why he lost. Wasn't necessarily the bunker shot that's going to be replayed over and over. And even though Rex, he has not won, as you mentioned, since fall 2022, it's not like this guy's soft. It's not like he doesn't know how to win golf tournaments. In fact,
he won the Ryder
Cup.
All you need to do
is look back at what happened at the Ryder Cup. He stood awfully tall, did Shane Lowry, on that final hole against Russell Henley, burying that putt to help Europe win the Ryder Cup on foreign soil. This guy is still a beast. He's still as tough of a competitor as you could possibly have in crunch time. It just hasn't happened in an individual tournament, and scars like what happened in Dubai are only going to make it harder. What'd you make of Rory, Rex? You said it was sort of spring training, knocking off a little bit of rust. He'll head now this week to Dubai Desert Classic. Is there anything that you could glean from this week that you think could potentially carry over to this week in Dubai?
No, I think it's become pretty standard the way Rory starts his seasons. And we all know his record at the Dubai Desert Classic. So I'm going to wait to withhold any judgment on his game until after next week. If somehow he comes out next week and struggles, then yes, maybe you start looking into what maybe he did or didn't do during the offseason. But this, like I said, it felt like spring training, and he said as much. He said as much that he's just working on some things, had new golf ball in play, had new irons in play. I think he had a couple fairway woods in play as well. I think all of this just shows you where his head's at right now. I mean, for Rory, and he's made this crystal clear, there's only a handful of events that really matter. And I know he shows up every week wanting to win, and giving himself a chance to win this week was impressive. Using his words, without his A game, it was kind of a Tiger Woods line from way back in the day. He's angling towards Augusta. And after that, it's the U.S. Open. And after that, it's the Open Championship and the PGA Championship. Like, that's where his focus is right now.
I mean, tournament directors across the world have to be cringing when he talks about just sort of practicing, and he was just hitting more drivers than he typically would have to just see how it was going to go, just using it in preparation for major championship season. But if you're a living legend, you can do whatever it is you want. I will say that 72nd hole has been somewhat cursed to Rory McIlroy. Remember last year, had the lead heading down the final hole, rope hooked it into the water left, ended up losing to Tommy Fleetwood. This time, perhaps with that memory etching his brain, blows it right, ends up not being able to get up and down from short of the green, and makes bogey there to squander what little chance he did have to win the golf tournament in 2026. So that's something to put away for your back pocket for 2027, potentially. How about Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, is going to be teeing it up this week at PGA West. He's played the American Express previously. He was going to play last year, of course, Rex, but was recovering from the hand issue that he sustained during the offseason. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What is the over-under officially for Scottie Scheffler's win total in 2026? Not just PGA Tour events. You could include major championships. You can include silly season events, Hero World Challenge, whatever you want to include.
I think we did this last week. 5 in the hook, right? So 5.5, somewhere around there. Maybe 6.5. I guess it depends on where the betting would come in. But I think it's safe to say, when you look at what he can possibly accomplish later this summer, certainly at the U.S. Open with the Grand Slam on the line. And I'm just going to start with the American Express. I don't know. I was a little surprised when I looked up his record that he's played the American Express 5 times. and he's never won it. And it's just kind of, it's getting to the point now where it is shocking when a player of that caliber has that many starts on that particular golf course, where you would think, yeah, it suits his skill set. Like everything he needs to do well. He doesn't like making a bunch of birdies, and that's kind of what the Amex is. It's a bit of a birdie fest, and it always has been. So maybe that throws him off a little bit. It will be interesting to watch him starting the season this year because of what we came off of last year, because of the injury and everything that set him back last year and how much time it took him to get back to full strength. I don't think we're going to see that. My guess is he spent this offseason two things: staying away from wine glasses and cutting pasta, making homemade pasta, and spending a lot of time on the range with Randy Smith working on his game.
Remember John Rahm fuming a couple years ago at PGA West, claiming that it was simply a putting contest. When you're one of the best players in the world, it you is. Do not want to see a track meet. You do not want to see winning scores of 25 to 30 under par. Can Scottie Scheffler win those golf tournaments? Certainly. But the variance, the putting, he wants a ball striking contest. That's where Scottie Scheffler is going to thrive. Like Rory McIlroy, he may be viewing the Amex as a little bit of spring training as well. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, yes, you're not just seeing us at 9 and 11 a.m. Eastern Time. You're also going to see us, Rex, at noon and 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Today. You and I are co-hosting. A lot going on. PGA Show, Demo Day, Scotty, Rory. Yes, the PGA Tour season, entire golf world is back at it. Looking forward to bringing it to you. We'll see you later today.